The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How the f*** have you not seen that?
And that's all we have time for today. I want to thank John for joining us and finally watching Memento. And also Gaz. Cheers for helping out, mate.
Good pod.
Think that was a really good discussion.
Bye.
See you on the next one. No. Hello, everybody. I just did a Memento on you, Memento style opening to this podcast by, of course, starting with the end. And in honour of this great film, we are actually going to run this entire How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That episode from back to front. So it's a complete shake-up for you guys.
Oh,
okay.
Shit. Here we go. Quiz time.
Yeah. Well, it probably will be. But
Zero out of six, pretty shameful, but, you know, I need to watch the film again. Yeah. Anyway, so.
Imagine now we're in black and white and we're just sort of giving you a bit of a story. So I'm joined by John. You heard his lovely voice there. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good, mate.
You've not...
Good.
You've not...
Yeah. Go on. I mean, you've just asked me how I'm doing and now you're trying to be ready. Jesus Christ. Or have I been going on for 15 minutes? I don't know.
Yeah, you're a goldfish. Yep. You don't remember these things. But I was just going to say, you haven't seen Memento, had you? Now you have.
Well, have I?
You know, don't give me your thoughts because that actually happens at the end. All right? But yeah,
he's got some photos here. One Gaz naked.
Do not trust him.
Yeah, it says, do not trust the size. All right,
Yeah, this is a lie.
And the man in that Polaroid, Gareth, how are you doing?
Very well, mate. I might be a little bit preoccupied throughout this pod. I apologise.
The Polaroid again. You're looking at yourself.
Got another pod going on.
Taking photos. Just taking some photos. I've got a little baby here with me, haven't I? So she might be making a guest appearance at some point. Probably making...
Talks more sense than you,
more
really.
More sense than us. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
well done.
Well, hello and welcome to Fan Critical Juniors, which will be starting up in 6 to 7 years, but this is the pilot project. But yeah, anyway, enough of this. It's time to jump into the quiz.
This is going to be so annoying, isn't it? Like, if you're listening to this and you're just going to be like, have I just skipped forward here? What's going on? What is going on?
I reckon we should actually talk backwards and then you can listen to this in rewind. So,
you can't say
time for
that.
The zero. All right, John, as is tradition here at the in the How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That episodes, I will be posing 6 questions to you centered around this film. Right. Now, this film is quite special because there are lots of things that you can take in visually watching this film, lots of numbers, lots of places, people. It's very interesting. I'm fascinated to see how you're going to do on this quiz. The thing is, you were totally expecting this to be at least in 45 minutes time. It's happening right now. So I'm very excited to really put you under some pressure. No one has ever failed the quiz. You must get 3 correct to not have to watch the film again. You know, that's just, no one has ever failed. Serious stuff.
I'm going to watch it again anyway.
I'm going to start.
This is ridiculously unfair. This is ridiculously unfair. Yeah. Because honestly, I can't even remember the names of the characters. So normally you get a 45-minute refresher.
Question number 1.
The quiz.
The name of the main character is...
Genuinely wouldn't even get it.
Teddy. No. Okay. Right. Let's play some music. Question number 1. What is the name of the desk clerk at the hotel at which Leonard is staying?
I mean, this should be multiple choice, really, shouldn't it? What's the name of the desk clerk?
Does it start with desk or clerk?
Fucking hell. I mean, look, I know the actor was in Batman Begins, so he went on to work with Christopher Nolan. It's a little teaser there for a little Easter egg.
No bonus points.
So a little bonus point there.
That was the real one. Henry.
Oh, I'm sorry, it was Bert. His name was Bert.
Not even close. Fucking hell. This is going to go badly.
Okay, okay. Question number two. What is Teddy's middle name?
He doesn't even know Teddy's first name.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on here? Are we talking about his real middle name? Because obviously he makes it all up, doesn't he?
This is actually an excellent question. It's an excellent question.
Yeah, and it's in several key shots. It's on his driver's license. What is Teddy's middle name?
What is Teddy's middle name? What is Teddy's middle name?
John. Begins with C.
What is Teddy's middle name? What is
Teddy's middle name?
I'm just asking you the question. I'm just as quizmaster. What is Teddy's middle
name? No. All right. Don't like it. Because, you know, now I'm going to guess based on that, and I don't want to. It doesn't even sound right to me anyway. It really doesn't.
Go with your gut then. I'm just saying.
Oh, I haven't got any other answers.
Middle name.
Edward.
Correct.
Yay. Well done. There you go. I bloody knew it. I knew it all along.
Oh, is it?
What's his full name?
I thought it was Richard.
James Edward Gamble. So, yep. Well done, John. Here you go. Next question. Where does Natalie work? Where does Natalie work?
John, where does Natalie work?
Edward. so what is the name of this fucking bar?
Edward's Bar.
What is it?
Teddy's. Just thinking of bar names.
Really?
Just thinking of bar names, like the red cow. what is it called?
I'm not
going to guess it. Yeah, go on.
It's Ferdy's Bar. Ferdy's Bar. Oh, God, you're in a bit of trouble here, John. Yeah, that's what it is.
I said I'd get 0 out of 6, and I would have done without that Teddy clue.
Here you go. You should get this one. How did Leonard's wife die?
Insulin shots. Overdose.
Correct. That's correct. Yes, well done.
He's back in the game.
He's back in the game. You just need to get one more right. Unfortunately for you, the last two questions are quite difficult, so I'm going to throw one in that's a bit easier.
No. They're only as difficult as the brain that teaches. Yeah?
So hold on. You only need one out of these two, right?
Yeah.
Okay, John. What are the last three characters of Teddy's car license plate?
Ooh.
It said a lot in the film.
I think a couple of the letters are like I and U. But how the license plates were. I don't drive. So, you know, I know how postcodes work. I don't know, like SIU or some shit.
It's 7IU. So close.
That is bollocks, isn't it? If I knew it was a number, I'd have.
That is
heartbreak.
That is heartbreaking. I'm
Let's do this quiz again in 15 minutes.
Somehow he's got worse. Okay. He's got a worse score.
Final question is, who should you always remember? Who should you always remember?
Is that a question?
Yes. Lenny has a tattoo on his hand that says remember, and then
what else does it say?
Yes, I mean, if you can't get that, you didn't even watch the fucking film, to be honest with you.
Fucking hell.
It says, remember Kaiser Soze.
I genuinely, the moron that keeps picking up the fucking the triangle and getting himself electrocuted. what is his name? Fucking hell.
Did you even watch this film? This is insane.
I should know this. But again, like, so... All right, I'll level with you. 20 minutes ago, I was in the shower, and I was like, his name's going to come up, but I know it's going to come up in the discussion that we have during this podcast. So you fucked me severely.
Yeah.
So I clearly would have... That clearly would
that
have come
is
up.
True. That is true. So, yeah. John, you've just
this
got
is
to
totally unfair.
Remember.
Totally
you
unfair.
To, you have to remember someone specific.
man, honestly, I've no clue here. I'd just be going with something like
Sammy one
Frankie
name
something.
That you
I
should know.
No, you know, I don't know. Okay, so Sammy is one. No, I can't remember.
It's Sammy Jenkins or whatever his name.
Jenkins.
Both of Len didn't even get this one right.
sorry, I wrote my notes. Jankis, Sammy Jankis. But John, unfortunately, that means you're the first person in How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That history.
Yeah, but this is bollocks.
To fail the quiz.
But I'm also the first person to have to do the quiz at the beginning. It's absolute bollocks.
You are?
Well, yeah.
You are.
Well, you wait until you're one, mate. Don't worry
jokes
about it.
Jokes
are getting zero out.
Len's going to edit this and put the quiz at the end, and then you'll sound like a right bell end.
Well, yeah, now I'm going to rip this film to shreds, which will upset you. So let's crack on.
No, I'm just going to be honest, John. I actually even gave you the easy Sammy question at the end. I had a harder one, which I threw away.
Go on then, ask me the harder one.
Okay, what is Teddy's phone number?
Oh, what sort of... What is that? Fucking hell. In the Portuguese edit of the film you've not seen, fucking go away.
What's
honestly.
His phone okay. number?
Eight.
Oh,
fuck
my God.
Me. I'll guess your phone John, number then. Let me just get your phone number up here.
We'll say that we'll put an asterisk next to it. So, you know, it's like on Top Gear whenever we used to watch that as kids. When someone did the track in the wet, they always put a little asterisk next to it and said, oh, he did the race track
in the wet.
That's
why he got shit score.
We'll put an asterisk next to this and say, but he had to do the quiz first.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was funny. A very amusing start, if anything,
or end.
So we move on to favorite performances.
Oh, can we just get on with doing this properly, please?
No. So we move on to favorite performances. Is it now, John? Go on. Sammy, for you, is he stand out with his little triangles getting electrocuted all the time? Or
yeah, he's good, isn't he? He's good. Favorite performances? I mean, look, Guy Pearce is good, isn't he? He's very good in this.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, you have seen it?
Yeah. No, I've just googled it now. So Guy Pearce is one, and Trinity's in it, isn't she? Carrie-Anne Moss.
Yeah, she is. She is. Yeah.
Keanu Reeves.
No, unfortunately not.
No.
Lawrence
okay,
Fishburne.
So, no, he's good, isn't he? I mean, did he really kick on after this, Guy Pearce? Like, I feel like he should be...
I think he should be bigger than he is.
He's Australian, you know? Isn't he? There's a limit to how big you can be.
Ooh.
Well, he was floating around at a time with Mel Gibson and Russell Crowe. So, you know, it was a bit of an Australian scrap.
Actually,
to see who could come out on top.
Interesting little bit of trivia. He was born in Ely in Cambridgeshire, which is where I was born.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Well, he's done better than you then.
And,
fucking hell.
Well,
yeah,
way.
Yeah, he's done way better.
How many kids has he got? One, actually.
And he's got no memory. So, jokes on him.
Good.
No, I think Guy Pearce is actually very good in this film. There is something... It must have been such an interesting film to shoot because everything is so short, every scene is so short, that it kind of just... He has to reset himself mentally every time. I think it must have been a pretty tough brief to get right and stay consistent and to actually have a character that feels consistent across all of his little vignettes. And that's what they are. They're all little vignettes. And I think he did a fantastic job, actually. And, you know, I can't... What else has Guy Pearce been in that's been better than... Like, performance-wise than this?
You know? LA Confidential is good.
Yes. Yes, we liked him in LA Confidential because he was very good in that. Okay. Yes.
That was before point, this, Gareth. Though. LA Confidential.
It was. Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, interesting, interesting.
So that he's like, interesting, isn't you it? Know, like he's the lead in this. Like, how many other like big films has he been the lead in after this? Because he's been that in films, like he's in The King's Speech, he's in Prometheus, but it's like.
Yep. Yep.
It's, yeah, it's just a bit of a weird one. Like, I mean, comparatively to someone like Russell Crowe. I mean, Jesus, he was this time he was doing Gladiator and Beautiful Mind. And...
Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Very good point. I mean, otherwise than that, and we can talk about Teddy a little bit as a character. He's fucking annoying and he just keeps popping up all the time, which is kind of, I guess, what you want from his character.
Do you think he's annoying?
Grinds my gears big time.
I think he's really good. I really, really like him. But
He's great, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like you want him to get a little punch in the face, don't you? But he's great. He's a cracking character. He's the bedrock of the film in a lot of ways because it's almost like this is the guy who's running things behind the scenes. He's integral, isn't he? He's crucial, and he's very well acted.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, he's a good actor.
Slimy cop Teddy. Slimy cop Teddy. I mean
he's slimy in everything, isn't he? Like Matrix a year before this as Cypher.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So this
Cypher,
is,
that's
this,
true.
That is true. Yeah.
God damn you, Cypher.
This is the Matrix.
Yeah. I thought it is, isn't it?
That's what we're talking about.
And then he's in Sopranos after this as a slimy character.
Yes.
Even worse.
Oh my god.
Much worse.
Even worse.
Yeah.
Way worse, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate his character in Sopranos so much. Like, oh, what a dickhead.
Yeah.
I also hate Tony's sister in The Sopranos. So, whichever way it is.
Janice, yeah.
Just Janice. Oh, my God. Anyway, enough of this. That's for our Sopranos podcast, which me and John are going to set up 10 years too late.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, performance wise, there's not much more to dig into, boys. It's time to go on to favorite scenes. And this would have helped John in the quiz, but obviously that's already happened. John, kick us off. What scene really captured your imagination with this film? I know it's difficult because they're all so short and it's so fractured that it might be difficult to choose one here.
Yeah, you know? Okay. So, I mean, this is why we shouldn't have done the podcast in this order. Because actually, I think I would score this film a lot lower than you think I would.
Save it.
Because I think, I'm just saying, but artistically, I think the film is better than it is in terms of entertaining to watch, for me at least. I'll be honest, I couldn't wait until it was over. But anyway, like, you know, we'll get on to that. I love his commentary throughout the film. He's like, he's very smooth, particularly the bit where he's running and he's like, right, okay, so what's going on here? And then he sees the guy and he's like, oh, right, yeah, I'm chasing this guy. And then the guy turns on him and he's like, oh, no, I'm actually running away from this guy. And he's been fired at. I thought it was hilarious. Every time that he's giving that like narration of kind of what he's actually thinking works really well. When he's, so the black and white scenes that run like in kind of linear structure, I thought they were really good. Just him talking on the phone, him telling that story, I thought he was great. I really loved it. But you're right. It's very difficult to go, this scene was great because it's all over the place, isn't it? As a film, but as I say, I think he carries a lot of it. And I guess if you're a leading actor, looking for a starring role, I mean, this is a film that kind of affords him to do kind of whatever he wants, really. So, yeah, I think they're probably my favourite bits. Him kind of just giving the audience a view as to what he's actually thinking at the time. It was good.
Yep. Yeah, he's a very charismatic person, considering he has this terrible affliction where he can't remember anything. Like, there's something very disarming about the way in which he talks to the audience, but also talks to the rest of the characters. I was going to say, like, he's even so disarming that Natalie, Trinity from Matrix, even though she pretty much knows that he killed her boyfriend, he is so disarming that she like takes him in and cares for him in a way, which is a baffling sort of situation.
It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
What do you mean?
Well, it's kind of like when he first turns up, she's kind of like,
"Yep,
what's going on here,
Jimmy?"
Yeah,
and then she knows it's his suit. She knows it's Jimmy's suit. She knows it's Jimmy's car.
Okay, yeah, that's the reaction, isn't it? You'd be like, "What's going on here?" Like,
yeah.
It's baffling. But again, it's
how much of a relationship did she have with this cat, with this drug dealer? That's the thing that you don't really get a sense of. Maybe she was in it for the money. Maybe, who knows?
Even still, you'd be like, "What the fuck are you driving this car on? Why have you got your suit on?"
Does she need to be in it? Like, as a character?
I think she adds a different perspective to how people, because she uses him as well. Like, so the thing that's fascinating about this film is, you know, I actually really like the reveal at the end, which we'll talk about in a minute, but which is actually at the start. But the thing that's funny about this film is, like, Lenny uses himself to not feel guilt about what he has done, but also all the characters around him use him for their own personal gain. So Teddy uses Lenny to hunt down other John G's and make money, and Natalie uses Lenny to get Dodd out of the picture and get these other pressures that are on her life, especially that, you know, scene where she makes him beat her up, which is, I think, one of the best scenes. Like, she goads him into beating her up, goes outside, waits a minute, takes all the pens out of the house so he can't write it down, and then comes back in the house and goes, what's happened to you? And she's like, Dodd happened. It's like, well, no, actually, you just beat her up, but you can't remember that. So she uses him to an effect as well. And it's sort of, she cares about him in a way, which feels really weird that she uses him like that. But it's just a different person using him that isn't Teddy, basically, which I thought was quite interesting. So I do think she needs to be there. I think there does need to be sort of a kinder foil for him in this film. Otherwise, it just sort of would drift, I think, into a much shorter and less emotional piece, because he does have a nice moment where he discusses his wife with her, which I think is quite good, because you don't really get those moments. They're few and far between because everything's so short that when he actually does open up to someone about his wife, it is her. So we get this bit of backstory about what's going on. Mm. But I, you know, I liked it. And to move on to the reveal, which I think is this is Christopher Nolan's first big film, really, and written by Jonathan, his brother, who, you know, has also been with him for all of his career, pretty much helping him out writing
it's
together.
It's his brother.
They
met in the family home.
Yeah. So throughout the whole film, you're led to believe that Sammy, this story about Sammy Jenkins, is basically the fact that, you know, that he overdosed his wife with insulin because his wife couldn't live with him in this condition, so thought he must be putting it on, he's faking it, like I said, I'll keep testing him with this insulin injection, ODs, right? And then you get this amazing reveal that it's actually, you know, it's got kind of Shutter Island vibes to it. It's got kind of that sort of subversion of character where he's selectively remembered certain things. Like, the assault did happen. He did lose his memory. Lenny, we're talking about now. But he omitted the details that it was actually him that was giving the insulin injections to his wife after the fact, after his condition, because she couldn't live with it. And the reveal of how it's done throughout the film with these sort of flash frames, little, you know, piecing different stories together of what his Sammy memories and stories and his actual memories, I felt was kind of you seeing a very unpolished Nolan. Like, you see this ending in, say, Inception, flash forward 15 years or 12 years or whatever, you see this ending in Inception in a much more cinematic and sort of beautifully emotive way, right? Like, he has this way of using time and using memory very beautifully later on in his films, in a lot of his films, whether it's Interstellar, whether it's Inception. And you can see it here. You see this sort of seed being planted, and then it's sort of, as he becomes a much more competent director and a much more confident director, you sort of see, you guys see that, right?
This is almost like a kind of black and white drawing of his idea, which, yeah, over years he adds color to, and you're right, yeah, it's a much more basic film in terms of its structure and the additions to it, and it's got a really good, really interesting kind of foundation. Obviously we're not going to go into scores yet, that comes later, obviously, but it's you're right, it's got the same skeleton of an idea that he has repackaged in sort of creative ways throughout his career, and it's interesting. Like, I think my 4-week old disagrees with this analysis. She's not happy about it at all. Watching this film now, it feels like it has dated a bit. And I don't know whether that's because I've since seen Nolan doing this basic idea in other guises in better, more stylish ways, whether that's maybe why it feels slightly dated these days. I don't know.
Well, it does. I mean, you know, you look at it and look at the visual, just the stunning visuals, and he takes us to other galaxies, you know, and sells this story of family and memory and you know, those elements, and he takes us to your dreams, and, you know, builds this beautiful
and the English
relationship and the English Channel, and he builds these amazing relationships and stuff, and you kind of feel like in this film, the relationship with his wife is obviously so important. It's the driving thing behind his mission. And I say mission in quotation marks, because obviously he's fabricated this mission and keeps fabricating this mission to give himself purpose, which is a fascinating sort of thing. But, you know, you can just see, like Gaz, you did say this is very basic. It is basic, but it's the beginning of, like, one of the best modern day directors that we have, arguably. And I think you see him expand upon this later on. But that reveal, you know, at the end of the film, which is actually the beginning of the film, where he's having this probably the longest scene in the film, John, where he's talking to Teddy after he's killed Jimmy, you know, the drug dealer. That, would you say that's your favourite? Is the payoff?
No, I mean, I've already told you what my favourite scene is. Or yeah, have you forgotten now? Or what's going on here? Honestly, fucking hell. Now, what I was going to say, just to jump on the point of it feeling dated. I mean, it feels like a 90s film. Like, you know, the grainy shots, it's kind of a reminder of what kind of how films used to look, I guess. But I tell you, no more is it. The biggest signifier of it being dated is throughout this whole film, I'm looking at him going, what's he wearing, man? Like, but there's,
GTA Vice
but
there's, City outfit.
Yeah, but then there's one bit where he puts on Carrie Ann Moss's, Natalie's shirt, It's very tight fitting. He puts it on. I'm like, oh, he looks pretty good now. And it's like, no, that's my shirt. And it's like, right, okay. And then he puts on that fucking baggy blue shirt. I'm like, so there you go. So that will tell you it's dated. He was wearing women's tight fitting clothes and he actually looked quite cool. he's got such a weird look in this film. His hair is terrible, isn't it? What's he doing?
It is. He has got a weird look, mainly because the tattoos, I think, are such a fascinating visual and quite a stunning visual. You know, like,
yeah, but he's the hair.
Weird. He's very, yeah, the hair. He's actually in kind of really good shape. He's in good nick in this film.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then you've got all.
What's going on with the hair? But,
yeah,
it really annoys me. It looks like. So I guess. What's the film with Tom Cruise and where he's the hitman and he's in the cab with Jamie Foxx?
Collateral. Collateral.
Yeah. So Tom Cruise's look in that film destroys all of it because it's like, what's he wearing here? Like, why has he got this hair? And it's a bit like this. Again, it's dated. But at least when you watch some of these like mid-90s films and everyone's got black, slick hair and it's like, okay, that's acceptable. When was it acceptable to have the hair that he has in this film? That'd be the first thing I'd pick up. I'm like, what's going on here? Honestly, it's terrible. It really puts me off.
Was that not a thing in the early 2000s? The Guy Pearce. The Guy Pearce, please. Hello, I'll have a Guy Pearce.
Yeah, I'll have a Piercy. Sorry, what?
I'll have a piercing. Yeah, those were definitely in.
Oh, you're taking a Pierce. Get out of it.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Another guy. Just another important point. That you sort of touched upon a little bit. That wasn't one. You sort of touched upon it, Len, but the relationship with a protagonist and their dead wife is a key feature of this film and Inception as well. But how much better is it done in Inception?
Exactly. And that's a testament to the way that film is obviously built, the scale, the budget, the, you know, the storytelling. Like, you can just see everything get more refined throughout his, you know, it's 10 years after this. I think it's maybe 12 years after. 10. Maybe it's 12 years is after it, this.
Is it? Is it because... yeah, it's like 2008, isn't it? Inception.
2010.
It's 10 years later than this.
Okay, cool. Is it because his wife just isn't really a character? Like, she's not
exactly. Yeah,
you know, she's not written for the film. So it's kind of like, and I guess that, but that's the irony, isn't it? Because you know you're following the lead actor, and he tells you the only thing that he can really remember is his wife, and that's the one thing that you don't really get any information on.
Yeah.
So, yep. She's fairly weak in this, and not to be too brutal. So when I was watching this with Michelle.
Oh God, here we go.
She was like, "I thought we'd have a better looking wife. I thought they'd cast looking wife."
I knew you'd say that.
Fair. I knew you'd say that,
and I knew you'd blame. Sexist I knew pig. You'd blame Shell as well.
Well. She did say it, so yeah. I'm not calling her ugly by any means, but she just looked fairly normal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I take that on board. I take Shell's opinion on board there.
Definitely hers.
Definitely not yours. Definitely hers. All right. Well, let's talk about what Rotten Tomatoes has to say about this film. Christopher Nolan skillfully guides the audience through Memento's fractured narrative, seeping his film in existential dread. Hazard a guess on the score from the critics, please.
83%.
I'm going to say
91%. 93% from the critics.
There you go, it was only 10% off.
94% audience, which I think is actually very impressive, because I think this film definitely struggles as John has said, as a enjoyable watch. There's not many times during this film we're like, God, I'm really enjoying this, and that is to do with the structure.
What a weird thing to say. I mean, you definitely sit there watching films going, God, I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, I do. You know I do. Because when we were in the cinema, yeah. when we used to watch films together, I used to go, this is bloody good, isn't it?
Mm. Or popcorn like, and M&M's flying everywhere. Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
These are the previews, mate. Loves Settle it. Down.
Well, I love the previews, so don't even get me started on that. Yeah. But yeah, let's move on to basically overall thoughts and blueberries on the film. And I think we can actually talk about it in a bit of a better way now because we've discussed some of the stuff already. So yes, starting with the quiz was harsh, but at least it lets us summarize our thoughts better now at the end of the film. I'll kick it off. And I'm going to say that John is, like I said, bang on. It's not an enjoyable watch. And actually, I don't know if you've done this, Gaz, but I have done this. And I didn't for this watch because... this rewatch, but I have watched on the
chronological
the Blu-ray the chronological order, which is it's quite a dull film when you do that. But it at least helps you understand the film better, because I think this film does require you it requires you to be making tattoos and notes on yourself to try to remember what the fuck's going on at times, because you're like, okay, right, yeah, these numbers here, and yeah, oh yeah, that's how he wrote that.
If
on
only
that
John
Polaroid.
Had got a few tattoos, he would have passed the quiz.
Exactly. And it kind of feels like, and I've said this before when we've talked about this, guys, I think this film feels like a student project, but it feels like a student project where Christopher Nolan is the student. Like, so it's the best student in the world of film. Making
why
it.
Why do you keep saying student? Why you saying like that?
Student.
Yeah, what's going on?
What do you mean?
Student.
Were you saying student? Student.
Yeah, it's a fucking student, isn't it?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
That's the same question.
Back on the market store after this.
£2, two for a pound.
Two for a pound. I'm a student at a game.
But no, like Nolan obviously makes this ridiculous concept work. And I'm going to agree with John. Like, this doesn't get a 5 from me because it's not enjoyable. Like, even rewatching it now, it's kind of a slog to get through it. However, I love the payoff at the end. And I love the way that we see Nolan start to form his. Way of storytelling, his auteurism, his the way that he makes films feel like his and have that emotional sort of twist at the end at sometimes, and the way he uses time is fascinating to me. So for me, it's a 4 blueberry film, and I didn't necessarily have a great time watching it again, and it's not a film that I would say we've got to watch Memento again tonight, you know. Oh, let's settle into Memento again.
Oh, we're not watching that again.
It's just not. Right. We're not watching that again.
Oh, John is.
So,
yeah.
John has to. I mean, look, John, I do agree with you that it's not that enjoyable. Now, I've given it a 4 on that basis because I still respect it. I respect what it's trying to do. What would you give it, sir?
I'm going to give it a 3. Which is, I mean, look, if we're talking about, it's one of those films that I wouldn't recommend to someone if they're like, oh, you know, have you got a good film for me to watch on a Saturday night that I've not seen? I wouldn't be reaching for Memento as something to go, oh, you, do you know what, you're going to enjoy this. However, if I was running a film class. And we were talking about how to write a film or maybe to kind of experiment a little bit, learn a little bit about what you enjoy, how to hide certain kind of reveals, then I'd certainly recommend it to a film class. Because it's been mentioned numerous times here. This is clearly Nolan getting a feel for his style, and I think if you were to pick up something like an Inception, you would go Christopher Nolan excels in writing smart, like, fantastical films. This is a smart film, and really the and it's definitely not a gimmick doing it having the structure or the timeline all over the place. It makes sense for the character. It puts you in the character's shoes, where you're kind of constantly like, where are we? What's going on? You're trying to piece everything together. So it's really smart in that way. It just doesn't make for being that interesting. And you never want to watch a film and go, okay, I mean, it was all over the place. And then at the end, it was like, okay, yeah, fine. At least with Inception, it's like, much like the Squid Game review, where I was like, I don't really care what the last episode does. It's Five Blue because I've loved the journey. And it's, and Inception, you just love the journey. And then the end makes it even better, where it's just like, that is a film where I'd purposely fail the quiz every time to watch it again.
yeah.
So yeah, so that's why I'd score it a three, because like genuinely, without any kind of me just trying to kick the film, watching this last night on a Saturday night, I was like, oh, I can't wait until this is over, because you've said the word slog, you know, and I'd imagine even more so when you've already seen it and you know what's going on. And it definitely feels like one of those where it will be rewarded on certainly a second or a third viewing. It's just not that entertaining in my opinion. So a three for me.
Yep. All right. Well, that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, John, to be honest with you, the way you were talking about it and how angry you were after the quiz. I thought he's going to take a blueberry off here for sure. Gaz, what were your thoughts? Short and sweet.
So the first time I saw this film was probably maybe 2004 it would have been, because I think a friend got it for me for my 16th birthday, and just out of nowhere I had Memento, and I don't think I'd even heard of it. And I'm pretty sure I loved it that first time I watched it. That could be because of the time as well, and this is a pre-Inception world. This is a pre Christopher Nolan as an absolute superstar director kind of world. And so perhaps with that context, it was more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it was more cutting edge. It was
mesmerizing.
Well, no, not quite mesmerizing, but sure. But it was more horror.
Alluring.
Let's go with that. Yeah. It was a mesmerizing, alluring sexual experience. which, you know, watching it back, like I watched it again a couple of years ago.
And
2000's hair. Mm. Reminds me of when I went and got myself a pierce at the hairdresser's. But I watched it a couple of years ago because I made my wife watch it, and I was like, oh yeah, this film's great. And that was a disappointing experience, and I wish I hadn't sold it as much as I did at that point. But she's used to me disappointing her. So that was
good.
Yeah, got there before you did.
Yeah.
Good.
But look, I think it's a really important film, if for nothing else but for Christopher Nolan's career. And I think that he is arguably the most... All right, settle down. Arguably the most important director of the last kind of 15 years. So I think that it has a lot of merit for that purpose, and I'm giving it four blueberries as well.
I just wanted to say before we wrap up talking about this film, because I think it's because we've done it in our own fractured way, this podcast, we might have missed a few little it's not, you know, little Easter eggs that are given to us in these flash frames with his wife. And one of them that strikes me is, and I don't know if, John, this would be interesting to see if you connected it on a one-time watch, which is, you remember he gets that Polaroid of him where he's happy and he's pointing to his chest and it's just weird. Like, he looks really weird in it, you know? You see a flash frame with his wife where he's lying there and his wife's like lying on his chest and there's a tattoo there. And the tattoo says, I've done it. And then obviously his wife overdoses from insulin, that he does, you know, he kills her essentially, or she kills herself, whichever way you want to look at it. And then he gets that tattoo removed.
Right.
So
no, I didn't see that.
So he's pointing to his chest. Sorry, he doesn't get the tattoo removed. That's just after he's killed the actual John G, who was a accomplice in, you know, creating this horrible world that he lives in. Then he points to his chest, and that's where he gets the tattoo. The tattoo, which is, you see, when he's with his wife. His wife then kills herself, or makes him kill her with the insulin, and he gets rid of the tattoo and creates this false narrative where he has to hunt down John G. And he keeps creating these false narratives with the help of Teddy, even then making Teddy the John, the JG, you know? So it's fascinating to
John,
me.
It's all right.
Like,
yeah.
I know it doesn't, if anyone thinks like, oh, this film is quite basic in a way, it is, but there is this layer of just basically lying to himself to get through this world, like to just exist, because he feels so bad about what he's done that he keeps creating this narrative where he has to find John G or James G and kill them so that he has purpose after losing his wife, which is actually very fascinating and a horrible, horrible existence that he has. So I just thought we'd end on that.
Brilliant.
Well, yeah, fucking hell, brilliant. The existential dread that was dripping through this podcast has come to the fore. Well, one thing I would say, so kind of as an artistic choice, so there's a bit where obviously this moron, I forgot his name again.
Teddy.
So, no,
Bert.
No.
Sammy Jenkins.
Yeah. Mr. Jankings or Jenkins. Hopefully it's Jenkins, because Jankings is a terrible name.
It's neither. It's Jankis.
Jankis, yeah. Oh, Sammy Jankis.
Okay. Again, nonsense name. But he's sitting in the chair and he's doing that look, and then they obviously stick one shot in, and it's Guy Pearce's character sitting there instead. And then it goes... But it's kind of like... I was like, why have they done that? Like, it's two on the nose, isn't it? Like, it's just a weird choice for them right at that time. I was kind of like, well, that was kind of a bit weird.
I think, but this is what we're talking about. I think now, you watching this as someone who has watched films for, you know, three decades, probably almost four now, and maybe still in your 30s.
All in our 30s.
So, but yeah, someone like you who's seen the way that Nolan's told stories to this point, maybe back then when we watched it when we were younger, it wasn't as on the nose, but right now is on the nose. You know, you are well tuned to those forms of storytelling.
Like, so Fight Club does very similar things, and that's what, like 98, and I think it works better in that.
True. Bigger budget, better actors probably.
Yeah, I guess so.
More fleshed out movie.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. It just felt out of sorts with the rest of the film. It's kind of not needed, I guess, but yeah.
Anyway. Well, interesting thought, John. And that was it. That was our...
Can I ask one more question? Sorry. Just to give this a little bit more oomph. So, of Nolan's films, is this at the bottom?
No, Tenet is for me. I thought Tenet, which is his latest film.
I haven't seen Tenet.
Huge disappointment. Visually quite... stunning, overly complicated. Like it's Nolan at his worst. He's overcomplicated the story, and it takes a really weird turn half the way through. And me and Gaz went to see that, and still to this day, I sit there thinking about Tenet, going, that was really bad. I didn't enjoy that film at all. Like, there was not much that I enjoyed.
I sort of agree with you, Len. And I think from memory, I gave Tenet 3 blueberries.
Oh, memory.
And Memento, obviously, I've just given 4. If you were to ask me which one I want to watch next, I'd watch Tenet.
Yes,
again.
Probably say Tenet, yeah, because you've only seen it once. And
it's got more going for
visually,
it.
Visually, it's got more going for it.
Enough kind of cool scenes.
But what I will say about Tenet as well is it is also a slog. Like, because you're sitting there having to think about the way the film's put together and time again, but not think about it in a really fun, imaginative way like Inception or another fun way like Interstellar. Like, you have this really sluggish construction or idea which gets taken way out of control. So, I'd say Tenet is actually considerably worse than this film. Mm.
I
this wouldn't be bottom of the pile for me.
I haven't seen Tenet, But prior to this, I would say, obviously, I think I've mentioned this before, that I didn't like Interstellar as much as you two did. But I would certainly watch Interstellar again over this. Ella is going absolutely mental in the background there, because she is a big Memento fan apparently. but I would put this as the worst of the Nolan films that I've seen, which is not necessarily
watch Tenet. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'll watch Tenet. I'll watch Tenet certainly.
Yeah, definitely. Oh well, that's interesting. And if you were to ask me what's my favourite Nolan film, I'd probably say The Prestige or Interstellar.
I love how confident you are for about 2 seconds every time you say something silly like,
yeah,
this is the best TV series I've seen.
Yeah. Hey, The Prestige is amazing. Apart don't even from, and go then, there.
The Prestige is excellent, but come on, man. Inception is just
Inception
for me,
best film.
For me, anyway, let us know your thoughts. Thank you for joining us on this very disjointed, very fractured, very just crazy
alluring
episode of How the Fuck. Alluring, sexual, mesmerizing.
Not time for the
episode
quiz
of How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That? And now it's time for the quiz. No,
welcome to the pod.
But yes, welcome to the pod. Thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you all on the next one. We don't know what it will be, everyone. We're going to reveal it maybe on the day.
We've seen all the films.
Emma and Lucy aren't here, and we've seen all the films, but there is more to come. I promise.
You just have to do Tenet.
So stay tuned. Thank you, thank you for sticking with us, and we apologise for John's lack of knowledge on the film. But to everyone, good night.
Hello.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.